Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I am your host, Laura Reeves. And I have a guest for us that we've visited with before, but this is a little different topic. So we're talking to Kelly Lynn Marquis. And in the past, we had a conversation about some personal life coaching and some other things that she was doing. And now we're going to talk about her new book, very exciting, Behind the Scenes of Best in Show, Intimate Moments with the Masters. Pure Dog Talk is proudly sponsored by Trupanion, medical insurance for the life of your pet. This year, give your buyers the gift of peace of mind with a special go-home day offer from Trupanion. This offer provides puppies with immediate coverage so they're protected should they get into mischief in their new homes. Trupanion covers pets against unexpected accidents and illnesses with no payout limits, helping ease the financial burden when a pet gets sick or injured. Even better, Trupanion is able to pay the veterinarian directly at the time of checkout, which means less out-of-pocket for your buyers. You can get this special offer for your buyers as part of the Breeder Support Program. It's completely free to join and available for breeders in the U.S., Canada, and Australia. Getting started is quick and easy. Just follow the link on my partner page at puredogtalk.com to get started. And I'm coming today to talk to you about Brilliant Pad, and it is amazing and an incredible way for me to do my potty training with the puppies and not ever have to touch any yucky stuff. Brilliant Pad literally rolls the mess up and you never touch it. So I really wanted to talk to you guys about that, share with you the experience I had with it. It's like the most amazing thing you've ever seen. So welcome, Kelly.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here, and I'm excited to actually be able to talk about my book because I spent 4 years writing it all by myself at dog shows, at Panera Bread, in my kitchen, and I was like, finally, I get to talk to people about this.
It's often a labor of love. I understand entirely. So talk to us a little bit about what you talk about in the introduction and things I thought was really interesting about why you wanted to do this particular book.
There are so many reasons, but I'm going to go with the first one that pops into my head. And the first one being that I chose several different examples of mastery, people that have excelled in their career, mm-hmm. and being able to choose that many different examples I thought was very helpful because people can identify with different aspects of certain people, mm-hmm. and how Michael Scott became a mastery and how he walks his path of mastery versus how Kaz does, or perhaps how Gwen did. We all have our own unique way in how we walk that walk. And in that, we may choose to explore the path differently. And for me, being able to talk to these different people and seeing how they go about it, it opened my eyes to different areas that maybe I haven't explored, where I thought, wow, what if I thought about life the way Michael does? How might my life be different? Right. Or from Gwen's perspective, or from Janice, or from Michelle. So that was one of my goals in bringing in all these different people. And another goal of mine that I had as well was at the time when I started writing, I was seeing some dissension, sometimes some frustration where I would hear people saying things about handlers doing all the winning. And, you know, I really, really wanted to show all of the work that goes into those wins. And even, you know, for many of us that you see in the book, for so many of the masters, it's not about the wins. Right. Actually, not one of them, right. mentioned about the win being something that matters to them. It's the behind the scenes mm-hmm. things that matter to them, whether it's you know, making their clients happy or the connection that they have with that dog. And that was a motivation.
Right. Well, and I think it was really interesting to me as I was reading through the book. It's a lot of the same types of information I'm trying to get across on Pure Dog Talk, like helping people understand that judges weren't hatched from eggs, or that when you're talking about people that are masters at their craft, they literally are masters at a craft, and that takes effort and time to develop. And so talk to us about some of the things that you saw when you were talking to these people that are transferable, if you will, that really are something that someone could pick up and say, okay, I can use this in my process of what I'm trying to achieve. When you were talking to, say, Michael Scott. So what is something that Michael Scott does? What is part of his path that you thought other people could take on for their own path?
It's interesting to me that you chose Michael, because this is a great way for me to answer the question. Michael was so hard for me to wrap my head around, because his priorities were very different than mine, and the way he sees the industry was very different than my background. My background was one as a breeder, and Gwen was my primary mentor. And coming from that framework, you know, there are thoughts that we have in our head that shape how we show up in the world. Mm-hmm. And when someone didn't judge her breed properly, as she felt it should have been judged, she got very angry at them. And she saw herself as a protector of the breed. That's part of Gwen's identity, is I am a Doberman person. This is my breed.
Listeners who maybe don't know, just the casual reference, Gwen DeMilta.
Gwen DeMilta, yes. And Gwen DeMilta has contributed to the sport of purebred dogs in the Dobermans that she bred, just a very powerful figure in the Doberman world. And Gwen, like many of us Doberman people, we can be very protective and possessive, and, you know, we are Doberman-y. And someone stepping into our ring, our territory, and they don't judge it properly, well, you better be prepared. Yeah. For you better have a strong backbone when you step into the Doberman ring. At least that's the way it used to be historically. Times are changing. And so that was the line of thinking. And I worked with Gwen, and this was about my breed and a judge judging it right. It became very personal at times. Mm-hmm. And being able to speak with Michael, where Michael is very much a businessman. Yes. And to Michael, it is his job to handle the dog to the ability and to bring that dog to the right judges. And he knows his judges well. He knows what they like, as did Gwen. But Michael's job was to handle. There wasn't the messiness that I would see in Gwen, and that also was active in myself as well. So when I interviewed Michael, and Michael said, my job is to handle the dog and to bring it to the right judges, period.
Right.
And he even went on to say that, look, it's a game. And that really triggered me, because I thought, no, this is serious business. And it isn't that Michael doesn't take it seriously, but he's very clear on what his role is as a handler. That was one of the things that really struck me interviewing Michael, was if Michael had been my mentor, and if I operated and navigated the dog show world with Michael's mindset, mm-hmm. how might my life be different? Mm. So that is one of the values that I think a reader can get from reading this book, where when you see where someone's priorities are and how that shapes how they navigate the world, what if I were to see things a little bit differently or practice this more like Michael does? Another example with Michael that really, again, triggered me when I was trying to write about him, I really had to step outside of Kelly, and I had to really try to understand who Michael was. And I am someone of integrity, so I really wanted to understand Michael. Michael also has this perspective So when I first asked Michael in the interview about his success, and he says, it just happened. And I thought, what do you mean, Michael? It just happened. I mean, I am someone that I work hard and I have to overcome. And there was a lot of force to my younger Kelly was trying to prove and make something happen. And Michael, make something happen. And Michael says, it just sort of happened. I just sort of fell into it. And I thought, wow, I just, okay, wrap my head around Michael. It was such a gift to me. I learned so much writing this chapter because there is this way that Michael navigates life where Michael's able to sort of step into life and say, what's going on around me? Okay, well, how can I make this work for me? And then when he sees what's working, I came back. Michael had stepped away from showing dogs and then ended up coming back. Then an opportunity came up to go work for Pat Craig Trotter. And so he went off to the West Coast to work for her. And while he was out working for Pat, his parents made the decision to retire. And many of his clients said, well, where's Michael? How about if you retire, we just hire Michael? And my recollection is it went something along the lines of his parents thought, well, yeah, sure. We'll ask Michael. He's out on the West Coast. Not sure what his plans are. They mentioned it to Michael and Michael's great. Sure. And so that's how Michael fell into it.
Right.
And so Michael had a history with some parents that were very well connected. They were connected with the Forsythes and with Andy Clark and some icons in our sport. And so he did have a great foundation. And then if you know Michael, if you know a bit about his parents and then what Michael did, Michael then stepped into it and then took that to a whole new level. So in that chapter where I got playful was that life happened to Michael and then he happened to life. He stepped in and he knows where to see that things are working and then to start influencing. That's where he really shows up. I hope that makes sense.
It does. And actually, I think one of the things, Kelly, my takeaway from that conversation and some of the people that I've talked to that kind of the same thing kind of come from the background is when we're able to remove ourselves, right? Our emotion. And this applies to handlers, this applies to breeders, this applies to owner handlers, baby dog people, everybody. If you can remove the emotion, take your ego out of it and just do the job, whatever that job is. If you're an owner handler, it's not a paying job, but it's still a job. You still have the job of presenting this dog to the very best of its ability. And it is, I've talked about it before, to me, amazing when we're able to do that. And I was always so much more successful as a handler showing other people's dogs. When I showed my own dogs, right, I got up in my feelings. I got my little feelers hurt, right?
So, yes.
I think that for me is what I'm talking about, a transferable thing. That's something that we can take away as whoever we are out here in listener land and hear that and think, how can I apply that in my own interaction in the dog world?
I love that. And I have two thoughts on that. One, I 100% agree with you when it comes to the passion and the emotional attachment. I always give credit to the owner handlers and let them know that when it comes to my own dog, I have to have another handler show it because it gets messy.
And I can't watch. I cannot watch.
And I was just talking with Cindy Huckfelt about when Gwen had her own bitch named Perfect that she was showing in the bred by class. And I have never in my life seen Masterful Demilta be such a hot mess. I mean, it was so laughable. And then Gwen asked me if I could show her. And then, of course, I would have loved to have helped out Gwen. But then I realized that I would have been working so hard to try to make Gwen happy that if Gwen saw me showing her, I was going to be a hot mess too. So Gwen ended up deciding to send her bitch Perfect out to Cindy Huckfelt. And so Cindy was able to do the job of the handler.
With less pressure, right? Without the emotional involvement. So I think there's a takeaway right there.
And we're able to assess the situation. One of the things that I love about handlers that I think is a lesson for, well, even for ourselves to bring out into the world, but we're masters of our emotion. It's like we look at this. What do I need to be? How do I need to show up for this dog? Yep. And we're very clear about that. Mm-hmm. And not having those roles, we have a very clear role and we're able to be in integrity. And we're also able to look at that dog and go, okay, what's going on with you? You and I, we need to make this work.
The beauty to me of working with a really good, really professional handler is that they're able to take away the emotion and assess the dog and say, this is good, this is bad. Here's your faults, here's your virtues. This is what I'm going to concentrate on. This is what I'm going to do to de-accentuate this other thing without having it all up in your feelings. And I think that that is an unremarked upon virtue of the professional dog handler.
Yeah, we don't have the luxury to have an emotional moment, which also gets me thinking about another motivation for my book. I wanted to show our humanity because when we're at a dog show, we need to be in business mode. We're not showing our feelings. You know, Michelle Scott talks about how difficult it can be for her at times managing her expectations and how she knows she wants to make people happy. And it can be so disappointing when you're not able to make that person happy. But we can't show that. We have to show up and we have to be professionals. But it doesn't mean that we don't feel things. It just means that when we're in business mode, we can't be getting caught up in those places. But we do have feelings just like everyone else.
We are people too. I say that a lot. Yeah. Handlers are people too.
Yes.
And actually, I think one of my favorite ones from the book that to me illustrates that, because it's one of my closest friends, Taffy McFadden, in terms of people in the sport that I'm around, that I appreciate, that I emulated, that I stalk Taffy. And I know Janice has talked about stalking Taffy. I mean, we all have, because of her real humanity, her real down-to-earth humanity. And I thought that that was something that you touched on in that chapter about Taffy.
I'm glad you brought that up. I had someone else bring up the Taffy chapter, and I was afraid I didn't do her justice. There's so much to Taffy.
There's a lot of depth there.
There's a lot of depth there. But the fact that somebody else brought it up, I'm just going to trust that I touched upon it enough that others are seeing it. But another person that spoke to me about her said, what I really loved about Taffy is you made reference to the fact that she was running number one dog all breed, and yet so humble, so humble. And being able to talk and sit with someone like Taffy, again, had my younger self met with someone like Taffy, her wisdom in the industry just emanates off of her. And to be able to say, look, I love dogs. I don't love all dogs. You know, there are certain dogs that I just don't have that connection with. And, you know, that dog is for Bill. Mm-hmm. I thought to myself, you know, when I was younger, I didn't have a dog show partner. So I thought it was my job to be all and everything to every dog and every person. And I thought, wow, there's such wisdom where Taffy can say, you know, I'm not feeling the connection with this one. This isn't the fit for me. Mm-hmm. And also, for me, Taffy was one of my first people to interview. And I also have a very spiritual side of how I feel that these dogs impact our lives. Right. And we see ourselves as dog show handlers, and there's the small what's going on in the dog show. But then to me, the spiritual is the bigger picture and what this means as a whole. And you know, these animals that come into our lives and change them. Mm-hmm. And in Taffy's chapter, you know, I opened up the interview with Taffy talking about spirituality, hoping that we could touch on that. And Taffy just said, handling is a spiritual experience for me. You know, these dogs that come in, they're so masterful and I learned so much from them. And that was one of the things I loved about Taffy is here's this person campaigning for number one dog all breed. And she's talking about how she doubts herself when she wakes up in the morning and she goes to a new dog show, am I good enough? And it really helped relieve a valve in me that I can actually hold space for, yes, I doubt myself. It's there. And look at Taffy, this person that I look up to and I respect. She has it too. And so it helps remove some of my own judgment of when self-doubt is showing up for me. It's like, wow, look at everything she's done. You know, maybe I just accept that there are times that I'm doubting, and that's okay. It just means that this is really important to me. I want to do well here, and I'm just not sure if I'm good enough, and that's okay.
Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. All right, crew, check it. The results are in, and 96 of the 100 top all-breed show dogs in 2023 are fed ProPlan. The high-performance food is made with 30% protein and 20% fat to fuel the metabolic needs of an active, keenly motivated show dog while maintaining lean muscle. The owners and handlers of these top champions choose to feed ProPlan because it delivers concentrated nutrition to optimize oxygen metabolism for increased endurance, a pivotal part of campaigning a show dog. ProPlan promotes nutrition for joint health and mobility and for healthy skin and coat. The ease of feeding one of the ProPlan All Life Stages formulas that provide complete and balanced nutrition for puppies to senior dogs is an added bonus. Try ProPlan and see why more owners and handlers of top show dogs choose it. Visit purina.com/ProPlan/dogs to learn more about the number one dog food of show dog owners and handlers in 2023.
Well, and I think, again, this is another one to me of these transferable bits. So if you're out there in reader land or listener land, and you're going to the dog show and you're showing your dog and you are doubting, well, okay, here's Taffy McFadden, and this is how she handled it. And I think that for me, when I talk to people, my sense of what I want to do is share, right? To share that with people. And I think that that's what some of this can do, is help people really gain strength, gain insight, gain confidence from people who are masters of their craft and still experience these same exact human emotions.
Mm-hmm. And then when you have someone like Jane Forsight, you know, when I'm getting into these, a lot of this exploring the different handlers, mm-hmm. is being able to do a deep dive into their personalities, mm-hmm. and what motivates them, and then being able to see how those motivators and their values and how that shapes how they show up as a professional and how they show up just as a human. Mm-hmm. And Jane, I mean, this woman, such a powerful, powerful woman. And the level of integrity that she brought into everything. And this is someone that, boy, she showed up to win. Oh, yeah. And it was always showed up to win. And I didn't know Jane. And in many ways, maybe, I don't know if it was helpful or not, I had to ask lots of questions and trying to wrap my head around, again, this godlike icon that people have such reverence for. You know, there's a part of me thinking, could she possibly be that amazing? And yet, time after time after time, the level of integrity that she brought, I just think she's a role model for all of us to see that when we bring that level of integrity into all we do, she is still impacting generations of handlers. And when I had the idea to write my book, I wasn't thinking Jane. I wasn't thinking about writing about Annie Clark. And Jane Forsight and Annie Clark were so foundational in the lives of Michael, Kaz, right. Andy Litton. They still speak their words and all that they learned. And boy, Jane wanted to win. And she took her job seriously, And she wanted to do right by her clients, by the dogs, by the people. And if you worked for Jane, you better show up and you better work hard, because that's the expectation. And one of the things that I loved, for me, there are moments when I get this hit in my body of, boy, I wish I could ask Jane about that. But I got such a hit when Sue told me about her receiving a B from a nun. And Jane just said, I am not a B student. And she walked out and she never looked back. She knew her worth. And I thought, what if we all knew our worth the way Jane did? And Jane just created this community. Sue Forsythe talked about that Jane would invite people for gatherings. And the dog show community, they were her family.
Yeah.
And she took care of them. And Pam DeHeter mentioned to me that when she was a young handler, Jane Forsythe asked her to cover a dog of hers. And Pam said she was so honored, like so honored to be able to help someone. And she did. She helped Jane. And apparently sometime later, I think Pam was going to Gwen's wedding. So she wanted to go to the wedding. She was going to have to miss showing some dogs. She asked Jane to help her, and Jane Forsythe covered Pam's dogs. And Pam said that when she went to a gathering at Jane's, I think she expected Jane to even like talk down to her. And that was not how Jane treated people. And she just, the way that woman showed up for herself and for others and in the community, it was so powerful. And I think we're missing leadership like Jane right now.
I think it's out there. I think people just need to hear it, and they need to find it, and they need to appreciate it when they do. Because the flip side of that leadership is it isn't always soft and fuzzy.
No.
A lot of sharp edges that come with it, and people need to accept that the path to success is not strewn with roses. And I think for me, you know, that would be sort of another takeaway. Like, it's hard work, and people aren't always going to be nice to you, and you're not always going to get a participation trophy. And that can be really tough. And so how we talk about that inside our community to encourage new people to stick around, and how we address that question, I think is really, really important. Because, you know, scaring people off with those sharp edges isn't useful, and yet, right, there's still no participation trophies. So I think that that kind of balance is really important and something that we can take away from that conversation as well.
Well, I love you going down this road, because another motivating factor for me is this is our community. And I'm looking around and it's scary. It looks like a dying community.
Mm-hmm. It's a retirement facility.
Well, and I believe that this is an underlying theme in my book as well, is that we are people. There are people at the ends of those leads, and we need to be taking care of ourselves and our community better. Yeah. I know we get on these kicks, even with self-care. One of the things that I've learned, even as being a mom is my number one priority. And if my work is getting me so strung out that when my daughter comes home from school, that I can't hold space for that because I'm too agitated myself, then I'm not able to be the mom that I want to be. And so even as handlers, when we show up at our job, are we making good choices for ourselves so that we can serve not only ourselves, but more people? And sometimes that means, in my case, I had to let go of a lot of clients that I'd worked for them for 20 years, 25 years. But boy, these were people that they rode me. They rode my help. They were never happy. They were never satisfied. And it was really hard letting those people go. But I needed to do it for me. And I needed to do it for the people that worked for, supported me, my assistants, my peers, because I expect myself to maintain a certain level of integrity and positivity. And not every day can be positive, I understand. But sometimes if we're not honoring what we need and the type of people that we want to be surrounded by, we're bringing ourselves down. So making better choices for ourselves so that we can show up the way that we want to is really important, because a lot of handlers, like when I talk about Katie Bernardin's chapter, you know, and Katie Bernardin gets into, you know, having to change up from showing, you know, a Labrador to a giant Schnauzer to a Springer to a Cavalier, and having to go through all these different breeds. You're going through all these different temperament changes. You need to show up differently for every single dog. Well, that goes for our clients too.
And the owners, I was just going to say, and the owners. So one of the things you said earlier is just always amazes me. People are like their dogs. So I showed a lot of Akitas, and the Akita standard says that the breed is other dog aggressive. The standard says they're dog aggressive. And I used to always say that Akita breeders were like their dog. They were other breeder aggressive. It was really a rough, rough group. Early on, I think it's gotten a lot better, but it's that type of thing. If you have to go from Akita to Clumber Spaniel to Irish Wolfhound, it's exactly what you're talking about. It is the people and the dogs all change. And so I think that that is 100% on point.
I'm working on coming out of the closet because I know I'm not the only one. And I could even hear with Janice talking about her animal communication. This is a client that I had worked for a lot of years and, you know, a very likable person. And the dog that he wanted me to show, you know, he kept saying, oh, you know, what's going on? I think you need to take her. I think you need to take her. And I got very clear what that dog was telling me. There's depression. And the dog was in such a depressing environment. Mm-hmm. And I'm not meaning to shame the owner. You know, depression is not a pleasant thing to live with. But I'm sure you can relate to what I'm saying, Laura. What I started saying to the owner, you know, I'm like, oh boy, can I say this to the owner? But I'm like, I know this owner is on depression medicine and it's affecting the dog. The dog is in such a depressed environment. Right. And so I said, well, you know, I think what would really benefit your dog, what I'm getting from her is, you know, to take her out, play ball with her. She wants to play. She needs you to be interacting. You're wanting it to be my job to bring this out of her, but she's actually your dog. And if you are able to show up at the shows in a more joyful place, your dog might be more happy to go into the show ring. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes I'm getting so much about what's going on with these dogs. And, you know, then as the handler, we can feel these things. A lot of us handlers, and you're probably the same way, Laura, we're empathic.
Yep.
I'm going to explain the difference because I had met with someone a couple of years ago and he said to me, he said, oh, I'm an empath. And I said, oh, well, what does that mean? Because people can get this confused. And so to me, the way I describe an empath is when I connect into my dog, I can feel things in my body with what's going on in their body. I can feel what they're feeling. And I think it's important for dog show handlers, for those of us that don't know who we are or know how we operate, to understand that this is a very real thing. Mm-hmm. And just because many other people in the world don't operate like that, we do. And so this person that I was talking to, when I asked him more about being an empath, I didn't point this out to him, but he was very sympathetic with what someone else is going through. And so, you know, if you can have sympathy, you can identify with someone's feelings and you can understand them, but you are not feeling their feelings.
Correct.
And so the more that I've stepped into owning the fact that I am an empath, there are people that it's just not healthy for me to work with. Mm-hmm. You know, so there are just people that I have to say, you know, this is not a bad person, but this depressed person could go work with Gwen. Not a problem. Gwen was a knower. She knew something, she followed it, but she wasn't a like, oh my God, I can feel everything going on. And so this is especially since Gwen has passed on, she's become even more of a like role model when I try to channel her to sometimes not be empathing and just be able to shut that off and be in my knowing and to be strong. Mm-hmm. You know, I do my life coaching. So it's just, I'm always coaching myself. And one of the reasons I love it. It's improved my life so much. And one of the things I talk about is I'm not going to say that being an empath is better than being a knower. Right. There are certain advantages. And so for me, now that I've identified that I am an empath, I do two things with that. I go more deeply into my empathing and I'm saying, what more is there that I can explore? Mm-hmm. And then I also say, how can I develop my abilities as being more like Gwen, and to just command, and to just know. And when I show up, I am me and you are you, and let's not mix that up. I call that being cleaner with my energy. So again, this coming back to when you said you talked to all these different masters, is being able to identify different aspects that each of those handlers bring to the table, and to say, where am I strong and where can I use more development? And for me, I could use more development in being more like Gwen, being more like Jane, being more like Michael, because for me, Janice and Michelle, they're feelers and I understand them. I really understand them. So I went off on a tangent.
It's all good. Out there in listener land, I think this has been an amazing conversation with Kelly. I thank you very, very much for sharing all of this with us. And the book is coming out soon.
April 9th.
April 9th. Okay. So you guys, Bolo, will it be available on Amazon? Where are people?
Amazon.
Amazon. Yes. All right. Behind the scenes of Best in Show, Intimate Moments with the Masters. Kelly Lynn Marquis, thank you. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Laura. It was a pleasure.
All right, crew. I hear from folks pretty much daily asking for a specific topic or for a series of podcasts on a topic. So ask and you shall receive. I've done all the hard work. I've sorted, searched, and compiled 8 different albums from the archives on our most popular topics. And when I say there's a podcast for that, I ain't just a woofin'. Getting yours today is super simple. Just jump on puredogtalk.com/store and click the PDT albums image. And when you're in there, you're going to find a collection of veterinary voices. You're going to find a collection for breeding and whelping hands-on. You'll find Pure Dog Talk University on dog breeding, Love the Breeds, Up Your Game, Owner Handlers, The Interviews, Events and Sports. There is so much there. And once you're in those links, you'll be able to read the details of the topic. For a special introductory price of $1.99, you get a link to dozens, up to more than 100 episodes on these specific topics. And while you're there, if you or a friend or family member are just getting started, even just starting a search for your first well-bred purebred dog, you can also check out Auntie Laura's Beginner's Guide to Show Dogs at puredogtalk.com/book to get the foundational Pure Dog Talk episodes with bonus tracks. So hop on it, y'all. These special prices will not last.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our Dog Show Superintendents are the hardworking people who make the Dog Show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the Supers desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.